Hello and welcome back to Millennial 2020. I'm now here with, again, one of the favourite guests each year. It is the inimitable JF Garipi. Have I pronounced your name correctly?
Absolutely. That's fine. How are you doing, Millennial?
I'm doing okay, thank you. We've got another 1.5 nights after this one of Millennial, and it's gone very well so far. So unless there's some kind of disaster, I think it's going to be a success. So yeah, I'm upbeat just now. So thank you. Did you have a nice Christmas?
Absolutely. I'm now in a new location, living a very withdrawn life from civilization, and so Christmas is among my nuclear family, really, because I don't have friends anymore. I don't have even extended family. I live in the North Pole in a very calm place, and I'm self-sufficient. I love just the feeling of Christmas. Doesn't need to even have a tree or anything special or decorations or social pressure. I live the autism life, and I love it.
And so how did you celebrate Christmas in Castle JF?
Well, we had a couple of gifts, and we just spent loving time in family with Mama JF. And really, I had also some streams where we did a ribeye stuffed with anchovies, and there were mackerel, fried mackerel on top of it with scallops. It was an amazing show. And I always do these dinners on these nights of Christmas.
Excellent. So you become a sort of a chef at Christmas time.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've always been a chef. Back in the days when I was a scientist, I would do these insane cooking demonstrations in the lab for other scientists. I've always wanted to do some spectacular cooking. I would love to cook for Gordon Ramsay one day. I think I can prepare a chicken drumstick that he would find fascinating.
Oh, all right. I'll see if I can pass that on to him for you. All right. So you wanted to talk about, I mean, I'm sure that we could talk more about Christmas, but a more substantial topic, given your own history on YouTube, would be to talk about 2020. And this is what I've talked about with other guests on Millennial, as you would expect. There has been BLM, there has been COVID, and there has been the US election. And there also has been the rise of Bitcoin. And I've been told that you're a Bitcoin extremist, a real fan, a connoisseur.
Absolutely. I've become independent due to Bitcoin, and I keep being independent from the world due to Bitcoin, and it's so wonderful. And I'm a Bitcoin maximalist, so I actually hate other cryptocurrencies.
All right. Well, on that note, actually, I should say that people can support, and I didn't just bring this in for the sake of it, but I genuinely was curious about JF's position on the crypto issue. But having, now that it's brought up, here are the ways that you can support me with crypto, should you so desire. Now, if you hold on a second, I'll just paste these links in, and there we go. And that would be very much appreciated. Now, also, I will share that link to the video. So, okay, would you like to talk about Bitcoin briefly, or should we go into the politics?
Absolutely, we can talk about it. I mean, how amazing is it that, what is it, 9, 10 years ago, some guy has an ID, a decentralized network that can do three ridiculous functions: send, receive, and hold. And to a space that is a totally virtual space, little blocks, 21 million blocks that mean nothing, but that mean everything because it means nothing. This is so beautiful, and it's so liberating. I'm amazed that 2020 was the year in the end where the institutional investors came in. At this point, we have people who own billions of dollars in Bitcoin, and it's not even people, it's corporations at this point. And one of the great innovators in this is Michael Saylor, who had already bought all of the Bitcoins he could buy with all of the cash that MicroStrategy had available. He wanted to buy more. So what does he do? He emits notes, promises from his company, giving interest rates to the people who buy it. And what does he do with this $600 million? He buys more Bitcoin. So at this point, we have Michael Saylor, more than $1 billion of Bitcoins in his possession. We have, of course, Binance, the CEO of Binance. Who knows how much they have? Probably multiple billions. It's so amazing. And it's a decentralized system that will be tested in the next 10 years through legislation, through attacks of all kinds, through judiciary decisions. But it is so early in this process. It's still not a problem. Legislation has still not become a problem for Bitcoin, and it will not in the short term. So there are still big investment opportunities. And what an halvening. We are now at an all-time high. Every time Bitcoin rises $1,000, it's the highest it's ever been. And Richard Spencer said 2 weeks ago, he said, sell all your Bitcoins at 20K because it's going to fall again. What a crazy man.
Well, he is known for coming out with rather strange ideas sometimes. But let's not go into that. So you would say that Bitcoin is something that people should get into, I'm guessing.
Absolutely. I mean, I said that you should get into Bitcoin 8 months ago, approximately when it was at 7,000. That's where I said to all my audience, now is the time to invest Bitcoin. If they listen to me, they have multiplied by four their entire wealth. So of course, if you're late and you didn't hear my counsel, then it's still not too late. It's going to rise still by 4x minimum. And so there's still big potential in the upper direction. But it's too bad that you couldn't join at 7,000 because counsel very clearly to do it.
Yeah, but it's still not too late. I mean, that's the key thing here is, doesn't matter that you weren't in at the start, you can get in now and you will still make gains. I saw a headline yesterday, Bitcoin price to grow 10 times by the end of 2022. As JP Morgan estimates value of $650,000 per Bitcoin by the end of 2022. $650,000.
Absolutely. The early predictions based on stock to flow was bringing the value at 100,000 or 180,000. Then there are some institutional investors who have looked at the situation and they've looked at all of the serious big names in financial holdings are now throwing their money into Bitcoin. And so you'd think whatever the picture we had 3 months ago is so much more positive. And in fact, 3 months ago, I was not thinking we would be at 27K before we even enter 2021. I was aiming for a peak around December 2021. I thought that the bull run would start somewhere in the spring or the summer. But what's happening is, let's not forget what determines the Bitcoin economy. It is big holders like Binance who have already all of the Bitcoins. Really, all they're waiting for is to create the bull run, to make it happen and see it happen in front of them. So you have exchanges that are actually incentivized in having this bull run happen, unlike in many markets where the holders of the thing, they want to get rid of it quick, they want to make money. Here we have a case where the exchanges actually are the biggest holders still.
Yeah, it's a very exciting time, and it is confusing for a lot of people. I mean, I think that, because, you know, it is obviously this is a special interest to you and me because we get deplatformed, defunded, and so on. So, I mean, you know, I want to sort of, disclaimer thing. I want to say that out up front. But at the same time, so obviously this is a way to support dissident content creators into the future that I think will be fairly future-proof. But it's also something that people should get into for their own reasons. As we've just described. So I think it's, I think it's just something that I want to keep sort of pushing towards people because, you know, that this is very serious for you and me, but it's also something that other people can definitely benefit from. So
ultimately, people like us, you know, will inevitably be cancelled, and we will have our bank accounts deleted at times, and other paths to us deleted. And so but the reason we need Bitcoin is ultimately the reason why everyone needs Bitcoin. It's because as soon as you have some sort of wealth, they're going to come for you. The government's going to come for you. Even your girlfriend's going to come for you. And Bitcoin takes this wealth and puts it in a virtual space where it can jump and freely move and change wallets. And it's beautiful.
All right. Some people, and I agree with you. I think it is a very exciting thing to get into. Some people are asking to sort of follow up on last year's millennial when you appeared, and you were very... noir-pilled, to coin a phrase. So intensely, and I wasn't sure whether you were trolling, and I was trying to sort of help you and so on. How do you see that hangout now, that stream, and how do you feel now in comparison to a year ago?
Well, I feel that I was absolutely right. What about you? I mean, because you were the one telling me, Jeff, I didn't know you were that black-pilled, and you were trying to push a little bit of white pill on me. But have I not been absolutely correct in what I've said in 2019, which was we are headed toward the absolute crushing of the right, where the right will realize that even their supposed success since 2016 were all illusory, and we're going to be crunched and crushed by the machine. And Trump will be crushed too. Was I not right?
Yes, I'm afraid you were. In the context of 2020, for sure, this has been a dreadful, dreadful year. But, I don't think I was dreadfully optimistic about 2020. I was saying, you know, in the long term, there's more hope. But yeah, I can definitely agree with you. I would never attempt to deny that 2020 has been an awful year.
Absolutely. I mean, we've seen essentially, you know, the control of the means of production, which may be like a utopian, bizarre idea for people that some far leftist hold in some extreme universities. But we've seen them deploy the control of the means of production in ways that I didn't even suspect, taking this whole pandemic and just shutting down everything. That was a beautiful performance showing just how strong the left is, that if they decide to crash the entire country, they can, and they can within 24 hours.
Some people are disagreeing with you very angrily. They're saying, you also said that Bernie would be our next president.
Well, yeah, I mean, because I thought that Bernie was the quickest channel for this leftist control. But what you end up finding is that actually there are people worse than Bernie who were actually already in power and who have destroyed the economy more than Bernie would have. And so when I saw 2020 deploy in front of me, I was like, okay, it's not true Bernie as I thought, but it's worse than I thought. In many ways, the economy of 2020, even under a Trump leader, which is amazing that they succeeded at putting this under a Republican president, is worse than communism. In communism, at least you can still go to the shop. You can still go try to get some food if you wait in line. Here we have just a reduction to everything that they define as essential, as if the job of people are not all essential, because the jobs that we do are all to feed us.
Yeah, well, another aspect of this is that, and hold on, I'm trying to find the objections that people were raising to what you were saying. Someone else said, JF will stream in clown face on January 20th when Trump is victorious.
That is true, because there are still people, I don't know what you think about them, millennial, but there are people in my audience, apparently, who believe that Trump will still find a way to get president, to kind of mess up the electoral college count, have maybe Mike Pence intervene with a special resolution and have the House and Senate do stuff, and that somehow he will be president on January 20th. And I said that I was willing to promise anything, that I would be willing to do to go through any humiliation if that was to happen. And so they've decided that I would be wearing a clown face, just a makeup of clown on my face if that was to happen.
Right. Well, you asked me what I thought about this. I don't know enough about US politics and the electoral system to comment on this. I would like Trump to win, but at the moment, I don't think it's going to happen. So I did think it was going to happen until about 3 weeks ago, and then something changed, and I just thought, this is looking less and less likely.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing how naive people are, and I get it, because I would want it to happen as much as they do. But I mean, at some point, you have to realize that given the presidency of Trump, we know a little more about the machine and how it reacts to an enemy entity. And Trump was an enemy entity to the machine. And we've seen today, they don't care. I mean, they voted in the House and they dismissed all of the objections of the president. So the president yesterday night gave up all of his leverage on the COVID relief bill. So he decided to say, all right, let's leave it to the politicians. And the politicians today are saying, all right, we'll give you $2,000 checks for the people, but none of your other objections. So it looks like we will enter 2021 and a Biden presidency with Section 230 unaffected, which means the continuation of internet censorship.
All right, so you're not, you know, buying a clown costume just now?
No, I think I'll wait, because that would be a wasteful expense for now.
Okay. Somebody else said, yes, you were right about 2020, but COVID was a black swan.
No, it wasn't. COVID was one more respiratory viruses, as they happen every whatever amount of time you want to put on this. If you want to look at any respiratory virus, they happen every year. If you want to look at any novel strain of respiratory virus that is other than influenza, they happen at least every 5 years. And if you want to look at a pandemic as deadly as the COVID pandemic, you may have to go back 5 to 10 years, but you're going to find a lot. And so, no, it wasn't a black swan. It was a regular event that was turned into a black swan by human reaction. And so this is what we've seen in terms of the push for testing. Just remark how early people were on the, we have to test. Why did we have to test? Because visibly, the testing didn't keep the pandemic from happening. It's not like it was some sort of very important knowledge that we were obtaining from these tests. The testing ultimately was to justify the intensity of the political reaction and to create a system of positive feedback between the politicians who wanted to shut down the entire world and the just natural occurrence of this virus and its natural spreading in the population.
Right. I think what people are saying is that the response was the black swan event, not the virus itself.
Well, but then you would need to conclude that I can predict black swans. And I actually have a less egotistical interpretation. I can't predict black swans. It just wasn't a black swan. It was all of the forces of society that I could perceive in 2019 that I know were right there ready to get into action. And I just didn't know that they would get into action on the pandemic side, but it just didn't cross my mind because, to be honest, it had been a while since we hadn't had a pandemic-based crisis. But I remember back in the H1N1 days, I made the same observations. I was like, there's something bizarre in the way this virus is being approached and treated, where politicians accuse each other of, oh, you caused the virus. And one point of great disappointment in Trump this year is how he played that game. So instead of accusing the Democrats and accusing the other side, he decided to accuse China and calling the virus, I will not repeat the words here, but giving the virus a name that was associating it with guilt toward China. And that was so low of him, because it's a natural event. are you responsible for the American viruses? It's like, at some point, are you responsible for HIV because some of the early eclosions made it to the US and then made it in other parts of the world? No, of course, we're not responsible for viruses, but this very simple principle I just stated seems to be absolutely otherworldly in 2020. It seems that we have taken a thing that is non-criminal and we've turned it into a criminal thing. And in fact, more than criminal, it's a pre-crime type of thing, Minority Report style, where just walking without a mask is an act of aggression in today's society.
Somebody is implying that you, in the first place, were joining in on the COVID thing. They're saying, oh, come on, JF, you were the original COVID fearmonger.
Aha. Well, they should go back to my streams. My streams were extremely early. I was on this story before the mainstream media. And in fact, the only person on the internet that was on the virus in the level of detail that I do, but in a different style, was Mr. Mittaker, a few days ahead of me. But I'm so proud of the coverage I've done, which was back in January 2020. That's 1 year ago, basically. And in January 2020, when no one was talking about this virus, I made a message, and perhaps people have misinterpreted from my thumbnails and from the fact that I was talking about the virus, but I say, watch the shows. I rewatch those shows. And what I say to people is, do not try to think that you can stop it. You won't. You will deploy all sorts of procedures. They won't work. The virus will find a way because life finds a way. I think it's not an alarmist message. Now, I did go a little extreme because
like the Jeff Goldblum character in Jurassic Park, that was the role you were playing.
Yes, exactly. And I went extreme because I showed to people, here's what you would have to do to stop the virus from spreading. And I bought an entire yellow hazmat suit, and I showed how you would have to exit your home, how you would have to re-enter your home, spray yourself with alcohol vapor. Then you would be okay. Then you would stop a pandemic. And I said, even in that show, I said, I'm just showing you guys this thing in case there's one day a zombie virus of some kind that you really need to protect you against. As far as COVID, I've never said it was an alarming virus. In a morally lost way or in a way that would be unhinged. I've just said this virus will spread on the planet and there will be a pandemic of it. No matter how much death there is, I couldn't tell back then. But it turns out that I've converged toward understanding that this virus has maybe a similar amount of death to rough viruses that we've had in the past, or perhaps another interpretation of this is to say simply that our populations were more likely to die from any respiratory virus this year. And that may be because we have latent immunosuppression problems in the population, in the sense that we keep people older and older in our society because of our medical successes. But the price of this is that if you save people from 9 diseases, they're more likely to die from the 10th disease. That's just a mathematical reality. And I think this is what we have to realize about 2020.
All right. There are some people asking various questions about this, but one of them is, will you take the vaccine?
I mean, it seems well, no, I will not take the vaccine. And it's not, I'm not even saying that it's unsafe. So let's be clear. Most vaccines are relatively safe. They have a couple of side effects that are happening on a very small portion of the population. And in the end, I'm not an anti-vaxxer, but I'm extremely alarmed at the way society treats vaccine and treats the social pressure around vaccines. So I'm alarmed at the invasion of rights that we see more and more. And we've seen it back in the H1N1 days. There was this social pressure in Quebec, for example. People were lining up and it was a social thing. I got the vaccine and I'm good because I care about others. And I'm afraid it will be worse with the coronavirus. We've already seen how the media amplifies these moral displays. And these moral displays are just one step away from a mob pressure onto the unvaccinated. And as we've seen, there is legislation being worked in France and other countries where they are saying that they want to make unvaccinated people second-class citizen, which started a long time ago, by the way, because Australia already had no jab, no pay since 2016. Other countries have been refusing children in public schools who are not vaccinated. And so there are big invasions of rights there. And I'm not particularly afraid of the COVID vaccine. However, I don't see the point for me of taking it because I'm not in a population that it's very high risk of dying. And on the other hand, it exposes you to the risk of a novel method to introduce vaccines. In fact, there's something of a lie in calling this a vaccine because vaccine.
I wondered about this because it is a new thing, isn't it? It's novel.
Yeah, it's a vaccine in the same way that the PlayStation 5 is a PlayStation 2. And it's not the same thing, really. They could have had different names because they're different machines. So the vaccine uses mRNA to introduce the antigen-producing RNA molecules in your cells. So we're one level away from DNA, like DNA, RNA, proteins. That's how it works in your body. It goes from the top to the bottom. And we're introducing a message in there. It's not a message that will insert into your genes, thankfully. We're not yet at the DNA-based vaccines, although I'm afraid it will come. But it's a message within the genetic system that outputs to proteins. And one of the great fears is around autoimmunity, is around the fact that we're modifying your cells for your immune system to combat stuff that is produced by your cells. That's like the beginning of autoimmunity, and autoimmune disorders are a problem. And I'm afraid that we are vaccinating so much and that we are making such social pressure that we may very well be unable to say experimentally how much of the autoimmunity we see today was induced by us. It's not a question that's easy to resolve because once you start vaccinating all children in a society, you have no more data. You have no more comparative control. And so we have studies that look at vaccinated versus unvaccinated children. How much health problems do they have? How much autoimmune disorder? How much irritation of the bowels? And we find sometimes in these studies that the unvaccinated children are doing massively good and sometimes better than the group of vaccinated children that they are compared against. But then scientists tell us, well, that's not a valid study because you don't have a double blind. But the vaccines enthusiasts don't have a double blind either because we are so urgently vaccinating everyone that we're not taking the time to say, all right, let's treat vaccines as a pill that the pharmaceuticals would be developing. We're not holding vaccines to the same scientific standard as we do to pills, and pills have their own worries, you know. There's been more than one medication that has caused problems, but it's alarming that we are treating vaccines at an even lower standard of evidence. And so for these reasons, and also for the reasons that I did have a cough this year, I spent a whole month doing my live stream coughing in the mic, and so I suspect I may have had COVID. I may be immune already.
Well, until it mutates.
Until it mutates. But then that's like any respiratory viruses, it comes in cycles, it mutates, and eventually your immune system, either your immune system gets enough of the variants to eventually be able to combat the new versions, or you have like the flu, it comes back every year, and so be it. You know, since when is that a problem that we have flu?
Yeah, of course. Somebody was asking, JF, what has happened to your mRNA vaccine info video? I can't find it on BitChute or on YouTube.
I had done a very good video about it. But YouTube changed their rules at some point, and they have specified a number of things that you couldn't say. And so because they changed their rule, and I was in the process of transferring to my BitChute, the video got lost. So I don't have a copy of it anymore. Maybe I can redo an episode. But unfortunately, there are certain worries and hypotheses that are no more possible to discuss on YouTube.
It's crazy, isn't it? But that does get to another thing that people were talking about in the comments, that you've obviously created a new, you've made a new start this year. If you wouldn't mind, why did you do that? I'm curious.
Well, I rebranded because we are faced with armies of people who are identifying us and identifying our beliefs. And they are categorizing us, and they are working to create a record, as if we were hateful people, which we are not. So I'm faced with the fact that I'm so intelligent and I'm so ninja-like in my approach to these agents of hate that I'm outplaying them. And so they never really quite found a quote of mine that would totally... like that would demonstrate that I'm I'm the hateful monster that they want me to be. But what they did very often was say, oh, it's not JF who's hateful. It's the show, the public space is hateful. And they did that by saying it's hateful because it promotes people who may be hateful. So you're stuck with these Wikipedia lines that are mind twisting. It's like, and you're like, okay. So somehow I would be not hateful, but somehow I made a show which was hateful. But I said, a show name is so easy to get rid of, and I can have another show name. Now what are you going to say now that my show is called JFG Tonight? Go ahead. Find a quote of me that is mean.
Well, I can see what you mean. You're now doing it without guests.
Exactly. That's one sad thing of this new format. I cannot have guests anymore because guests are just not trained enough at this point to respect the YouTube rules for maintaining a monetization. Now, I see that you've been successful this year with the millennial. But maintaining monetization is another standard on YouTube, and I have been successful. All of my videos since I started the new show, they're all monetized. So I know how to phrase stuff to stay within the Tim Pool space of things while offering an ideological alternative to Tim Pool. But it's a complex list of rules. I mean, if you just go through the COVID rules themselves, there's 15 things you can't say about COVID. It's amazing.
Yeah, it does sound, it seems like a minefield. It feels very, risky being on YouTube nowadays. I even wondered about doing this episode just on DLive, as I've done with several episodes this year, because I thought maybe you would enjoy that freedom. But of course, I get the feeling that you wouldn't, because then that would, you might go crazy and say all sorts of very hateful things, which could then be used against you.
No, I mean, the fact is, I prefer being on YouTube because all of my talking, I adjust it. Even if I talk outside of the YouTube context, I respect the YouTube rules because I know that one day they're going to go up to the point of saying we're demonetizing you because of other activities you've done elsewhere.
Yeah.
And we've seen that with Patreon.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. It's not... That is another trick they can use. I mean, of course, we're operating on their ground, so they can just change the rules. That's a big problem. Would you have anything to say about the matter of alt tech?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I'm enthusiastic about alt tech, but its development and its gaining of a network and kind of oligopolistic effect and its drawing of audience is simply smaller. And so we have to deal with this. It's partly because of the technical aspect of video serving and the amount of data that is needed. It's easy to make a little website that serves video. It's another thing to make a website that becomes popular and serves video to everyone. There are technical limits here. There is bandwidth. There is space. So BitChute has been succeeding more or less at doing it, but still not at a very high video resolution and still not at a very high viewership, although this is getting better and better. The viewership is increasing. Perhaps the quality and the availability of live streaming will be needed. Now, there are other options that are actually technically superior in terms of their decentralization, like Library. So they come out very good. They are decentralized. They are apparently very hard to censor. And though the problem is Library is a, there's not many people there. And so if you have a small show like me, you can't move there. You may be able to move a part of your audience if you're a big YouTuber, but it's unfeasible for small creators. So YouTube remains the only option for someone like me.
Yeah. See, something that always confuses me about Library and these other decentralized ones, how do they keep things off? Like, I know this is kind of...
Like very evil stuff or criminal stuff.
Child porn and stuff. I mean, how do they... Because if you're going to be anti-censorship and say, well, we just believe in no censorship and we don't want that in the system at all, then how are you going to keep it, you know, civilized?
That's a big problem that any decentralized platform faces. In fact, we've seen BitChute be annoyed by some people on the right because they confirmed this year that they were removing some very, very arch terroristic videos. It's like something that you and I even wouldn't object to it being removed. And they got presented by some extreme parts of the right as, oh my God, they are censoring now. Well, not so much. I mean, I can understand that they need some control to not be involved in criminal pursuit. But yeah, I mean, it's a problem. So ultimately it boils down to, is the platform truly decentralized? In which case it's unfeasible. Or is the platform centralized and it's feasible in some form? You just have to have your the leader of your website have some balls and be able to say, all right, I'm censoring this because this is extreme stuff, but all of the rest stays. And BitChute has taken the not truly decentralized model, which long term could be a worry, but as long as we have someone with balls there, it's not a problem. There are truly decentralized options like the dark web, like there are some networks linked to certain cryptocurrency that are truly decentralized. But these truly decentralized things become dumpster of the internet, and it doesn't...
Exactly. Nobody's there. Yeah, it defeats the purpose of making videos to communicate with the public.
Now, Gab is an example of a place where they have adopted a truly decentralized system, and it's been working good. And I'm sad that they have created this alternative Parler to compete with Gab, because in the end, I think Gab was doing a good job. And in fact, they switched from centralized server to decentralized, I don't remember the name of their network, but it's a decentralized system for social media. Parler is centralized, so I expect them to converge toward perhaps some form of censorship in the future. It's very much a conservative right-wing talking points type of thing. It's for the Laura Loomer type.
Yes, exactly. It's interesting to see how much you divide my audience, JF, because...
Every year, by the way.
Yeah, because on the one hand, I've got somebody saying, JF has an 85 IQ. And then at the same time, someone says, JFG Tonight is the best channel on YouTube.
Yeah, well, I'm a divisive guy. I think that my whole career on YouTube has been felt by some people as a false promise. I think some people feel betrayed that somehow I wasn't as extreme as they wanted, or somehow I copped to something that they perceived was a deal breaker for them. I have to say, all my life I've been following my own principles, and I'm always a contrarian and a free thinker. So even in an ideological movement, you won't be attaching me to something or some like common wisdom of other people. I don't bend to pressure. And that's true for my enemies, and it's also true for my friends.
All right. On that note, some other people earlier on were saying that you ban everyone from your channel nowadays, and they were complaining and saying, oh, he bans everybody now.
Yeah, well, I do ban. I've been banning since the beginning, so it's not a surprise. It's not now. It's always been the case. I don't like two types of people. I don't like people who come to comment to just put me in trouble. And so if you come and you violate rules that I wouldn't allow myself to violate on the video, I will ban you. It's just a functional thing. You threaten my income. And I'm an existentialist. If you threaten my existence to start with, you are off my life. And I'll block you. I will ban you. The second type that I do ban is just people who come with negative comments that are not into the show. You know, they look at the new show and they complain, and all they can do is complain, and they don't realize that, okay, the things you complain against, I've been sad that they are that way, but it's still the only way I can run a show. So if you're disappointed that I don't have guests, for example, it was the job of the guests to be talented enough to phrase their stuff properly for rules. They were not able to. So what do you want me to do? You want me to go on DLive? I'll have a small audience and I'll have this crappy childish interface that looks like a game with ninja innies. Are you kidding me? No, I do what I can do. So if you're here to complain, yes, sometimes I will ban people who are just too negative.
Well, I have to say you're being negative about DLive. I mean, it's not just ninja guineas. There are also diamonds and ice creams and lemons and ninjets. So there.
Unbelievable.
Well, sorry, you go.
In a way, it fits so much. Some of the people who have moved to this platform, like DLive, like Nick Fuentes. Because it's so in the moment in terms of there's not even a holding of video in archive. It's like the videos disappear after they have been consumed. It's such a Generation Z type of thing. Like the present time is the only thing that exists. There is no record. There is no time. There is no commenting other than through the live chat. I mean, they have a certain commenting, but eventually the video disappears. So what's the function of this? Really, I don't like it. And ultimately, money is what makes me work. I don't work for lemons. I don't want to hold a conversion rate in my head knowing how much lemons you've given me. It's too childish. I want people to know, all right, people have paid $20 in Super Chat for this, $20 US. How many bitcoins? I want this all to be public. I don't want any lemons, and I don't know what's the rate for these lemons. I don't want to know. And on top of it, DLive has been extremely long to even accept me at their second degree partnership. So they've never been quite attractive. They've never let me do transcoding, for example. So some of my audience have bad computers. They want to watch me on a reduced video resolution. DLive did not allow this to me because I was not a global partner. So I can't use a platform in that state. But if I had to, I would use it, of course. I do what I have to do to survive.
Yes, I understand. Okay, we were going to talk about, we were going to talk about COVID, I think. And I don't know if we actually planned to do that, but we've definitely gone into that. Would you like to talk about BLM, or would you rather steer well clear of such topics on YouTube?
I mean, we can talk about it. It's not a problem.
Okay, you go for it. Give us your take on George Floyd and BLM and all that.
I mean, my take. It's been a year where what has been used has been done every 4 years in America forever. This has been a recurrent observation. But this year, it was so much bigger for some reason. I mean, for some reason. The reason is the motivation within the machine, the political machine against Trump, was the highest there's never been that much hate for a president in the entire history of the nation. And so that's the circumstance in which the whole BLM protests were activated in spring and summer. What is there to say about it? It seems to me that the community supporting BLM, and I'm choosing my words here, the community supporting BLM will have to grow into adults and understand that they are losing the political game. Because in the end, all this political noise that they've done, all this pressure, they will not be part of the administration. We have a Joe Biden coming in, which in many ways will be less of a service to the black community than even Trump was. So you have actually weakened your position, the black community, by favoring Joe Biden over Trump. Now, it's clear that the Democrats will have a tendency to make these generous social programs, and they will send money like they've been doing today with the $2,000 check. But what Trump was proposing to the black community was so much greater. It was the advantage of self-sustainable success through capitalism. That's what he wanted to sell them. And that's what he wanted to sell women to a certain extent. But particularly his effort toward the black community has been to invest all efforts possible to create the recipes for success for them. And he succeeded to some extent, because when we say that that jobs have been amazing under Trump, for example, what we often don't say in this analysis is that they were actually improved. The employment rate was improved in black areas of the U.S., but it actually stayed neutral, or in fact was worse in white areas of the U.S. So in a way, Trump was truly the president of the black community. And yet you have this political creation, the BLM movement, which is supported not just by the black community, but by white liberals, as we may call them. And so they have this political creature that exists and that creates havoc before an election and raises awareness around the issue of police issues, which I note, by the way, that all cases that we're being presented with of police poor performance with suspects are all cases where the suspect clearly would have had the chance to get a peaceful resolution. At this point, we are not into catching a policeman just torturing people for no reason or just shooting people for no reason. We are all in cases where had the proper behavior and non-resistance toward the order of the policeman be used, we wouldn't have had a death. And so what is the responsibility of a policeman if I, in my level of excitation and in the drugs that I consume and in my way that I overstimulate myself during an arrest, what is the responsibility of the policeman versus the responsibility of myself? I believe that I am responsible for causing my own heart attack if I trigger an arrest that is more violent than it needs to be. And this, of course, is something that the leftists will not process at all cognitively. But to me, that's the fact of the matter. We must not hold policemen responsible for people who force their overreaction, because there is no other solution to neutralize a guy if the guy is showing non-compliance.
All right. I see. I'm scared to say anything in response to that, because we are on YouTube, and I'll just say yes. There you go. That's all I'm going to say. I mean, should I risk it? I mean, obviously, if what you're saying is sensible, I think that's, yeah. And if the policemen have got guns, then do you really think it's sensible to argue with them? And then put yourself in a position where they might well use the guns in order to subdue you. Is that sensible? or is it self-evidently a dangerous, risky thing to do? Of course, in the case of George, in the case of George Floyd, guns weren't involved, were they?
Talking about guns. We're talking about perhaps. I mean, and by the way, my early analysis of the George Floyd incident in particular was that on the very day it happened, was that there, and as the webcams were being released and stuff, I think that Derek Chauvin did something that may be abusive, but in the sense of neutralizing the neck that way for so long. And I do not stand in defense of Derek Chauvin, but I simply point out, what if he's been trained to do this? Perhaps it's more a question of selecting the proper techniques. And perhaps because as a neuroscientist, I understand that you don't mess with the neck. When you mess with the neck, you mess with the brain. And so you don't apply pressure on the neck for any more than 10 seconds, really. That should be simply what we teach policemen, that rear naked chokes is possible. It's possible that you're in a situation where the only way to neutralize is some sort of chokehold, but it should never last more than 10 seconds. Simple as that. If the 10 seconds is not enough, you're going to have to use another restraining tactic.
Yeah, okay. Let's move on to a completely different and much more innocuous topic. JF, my favorite dog breed is the poodle. What is your favorite dog breed?
My favorite dog breed is the Yorkshire, because it's the only dog I've ever had. She was a Yorkshire, and it's cute. It's very small. It's very capricious and very expressive. It's like
Isn't it nice to feel the YouTube censors just back away now that we're talking about fluffy animals?
The algorithm is spiking. Monetize this.
I'm well past that.
I'm telling you, there's currently a wave of hope in the algorithm. It's saying, you know, this guy, Millionaire Wolves, maybe he's not so bad.
He asked questions about poodles and so on. Who could object to that? So sorry, yeah. So the Yorkshire Terrier, that's your dog of choice.
Yes, miniature as possible.
All right, okay. All right, another question. Someone's donated a large, generous amount and said, thanks so much for Millennial this year. Thank you very much, Nick. That's very generous. All right. Now, what does JF think about low-income whites quitting their bugman jobs and sponging on welfare? After all, the system hates us. Hate them back, no? I feel physically ill contributing to this system. Yeah, I can understand it.
Well, in principle, it's a bad societal practice to be saving everyone. And so when we do these things, yes, we have a genetic effect, I believe, on the people. And it's not just, you know, the people you were mentioning. It's really any social welfare system encourages its own exploitation and makes possible the reproduction of people who in other circumstances may not have reproduced. And so I believe it's wrong from a societal perspective to help anyone. I believe that help should only emerge from surplus and charity. It should emerge when you have too much money, it's okay to give, but it should be voluntary and you should be the one determining what's too much money. Right now we have the government deciding what's too much money and deciding what it's going to do with this too much. And so we are essentially abolishing the survival pressures that existed on us forever, which have built us into the magnificent creatures that we are. I mean, it's something impressive that every human pretty much has two arms, two legs, somewhat a capacity to speak and some level of intelligence. This is amazing. You don't stay in this shape if you try to save everyone. And so I would return to a state of nature where governments may still exist, but in a very small form, in a minimal way, just to coordinate certain activities that need, that by their nature need to be coordinated, like roads. So just in case people are worried, my roads, don't worry, I'm not removing your roads. But other than this, I think that the humans should be left to find the solutions to their own problem. And sometimes it may involve some degree of community, but not big nations like 300 million people. That's absolute nonsense, because it inevitably leads to the state of social welfare. That being said, you were asking, should I target people and should I be hateful toward them? Absolutely not. It's not the fault of the individual that they rise in this system that's been designed to make them want this money, and they may really need this money. So I see no point to be socially shaming the whites who get social welfare. What we have to do is create a political system in which the politicians, there may not be even politicians, but in which the system itself leads to very little unconsensual drawing of your money. And the solution to it is a very, very strong constitutional order that strongly limits the possibilities for democracy to simple management of a very small state.
All right. So, I mean, I have given a different answer to that same question before, because basically I think that welfare is bad for you psychologically. And you might say spiritually, I think it's really bad for you. And I speak, you know, I say that from experience. So I think that if you can live with that, then that's a different matter. But I think that a lot of people would be damaged by living just by the act of being on welfare and knowing that you're on welfare. So that's a danger that but also the other thing is, it's just better to be self-sufficient. And then the other thing is that, it might well be illegal to live on welfare if you don't need to. So, you know, obviously I'm not going to encourage anyone to do anything illegal. There was a question.
I've experienced at the individual level something like this, because when I wrote this book, The Revolutionary Phenotype, which, by the way, was this year, backed in October of this year, backed by Robert Rivers, the greatest scientist in my field. And he said, this is amazing. It's a very powerful book. And he had only positive words for it. When I wrote this, I could have been on social welfare, but I wasn't. But I was poor, poor, poor. I had $0. And yet I was hanging to the hope that this book would be successful and make me wealthy. Now, would I have had these dreams? Would I have had this drive if I had a check every month? Perhaps not. Perhaps not. Perhaps I would have found solutions to be living a very simple life and surviving with the checks of the government, but I wasn't. I was poor and in distress and in absolute need of a big thing. And that's how I wrote this book, in that state. This hunger for success may not exist in a world that gives too much for free.
Yes, that indeed, it could well lull people into a sort of state of just having no motivation anymore. And I think that is true. Nobody would want that. Okay, we'll move on to the DLive Ninja Guineas and so on.
Yeah, now we are headed toward 8 p.m. Eastern time. So if we can do as quickly as possible, I will be headed toward doing my own show.
Okay, I'll rattle through this. Jan the Ban, I donated 0.2 or 3 BTC to JF back when it was worth a few thousand. I hope you did hold. Iron Spark Iron Spark says, don't fuck with the Keith. I'm not sure what he means by that. Someone else said, Safranov, the counter movement is really just starting, though, in reference to what you were saying about it being crushed. Danish Warrior said, big fan of Millennial. Thank you very much. Iron Spark said, take vitamin D. I think that was health advice for you living in the North Pole. Iron Spark said, Metacur did some great fear also sticks. I don't know what he means.
Metacur was very alarmist and too much to my taste.
Okay. Savinov said it's Tucker Carlson's fault. I don't know what he was referring to there. Sorry. Someone else said, good man, JF. Mandatory vaccination is totalitarianism. And then someone said, Parler is funded by Mercers, alt-light types. And Iron Spark said, JF, you were the nihilist last year. God bless. And also someone said, Woz, have you seen Michael Woodley interviewed by Molyneux? No, I haven't, but I did see him interviewed by someone else. It might have been the distributist, and it was very good. Okay, so on that last note, you were indeed the nihilist last year. Would you say that you feel more upbeat than you did last time you were on Millennial?
No, I mean, okay. I have a wonderful personal life. It's amazing. I'm blessed with the greatest joys of life. And so I cannot be sad about the world, but all the rest, the political system, society is going down. And it's been going just at a faster rate than I would even expect. So I have no hope for the movement, whatever people call the movement. I have no hope for the right wing. I have no hope for even the Republican Party. We can see even the Republican Party being anti-Trump, anti-Trumpists to some extent, and they are more than happy that they're getting rid of Trump this year. And this is what's to come is a take back of the machine, of the political elites that have been controlling America forever, and they are coming back after their 4 years of pause.
Okay. Well, that was a very depressed summary, and thank you very much. One last question, should be an easy one before you leave. And several people were asking this in the live chat. Have you ever seen Allo Allo?
Hello, hello.
Yeah, hello, hello. It's like the French way of saying hello, hello.
Yes, it's my way of saying hello. Okay, I get it.
No, no, it's a sitcom, hello, hello.
Oh, it's a sitcom? No, yeah. I've never seen it.
Okay, well, you might like it. You might like it. I think it's hilarious. And clearly okay. Some other people do as well. So thank you, JF. I can tell you want to get away. So thank you for taking part in Millennial 2020. And I'm sure we'll see you again soon.
Thanks for inviting me. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Everyone else, I'll be back in an hour with Settler's Lament. In the meantime,